Good evening, everybody, or good afternoon, good late afternoon, as it is in the case of our host, or it's our host, not our host, our guest, Steve Popper of Newsday, longtime New York fixture on the New York sports team. He's worked for just about everywhere, the New York Times, the New York Post, now with Newsday after a few years at Gannett. There's an Associated Press story in there somewhere that we're probably not going to get to today, but Steve, yeah. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, best to leave that one out.
Steve's joining us today from Denver, where the New York Knicks held practice this afternoon in advance of the New Year's night game against the Denver Nuggets, and it's going to be an interesting one to watch playing time-wise because Enes Kanter, one of the best rebounders in the NBA, but not one of the best defenders in the NBA, is most certainly on the trade block. Not upset, not all that happy about the amount of playing time he's getting. He watched the Knicks fall behind by, what was it, Steve, 47, 49 points against the Utah Jazz?
46 was a high point, low point, whatever you want to call it, the other day.
That was a high point.
You know.
They
were happy that they won the second half, they said. And I was kind of, that's not the way it works when you're down by 46 and the rest of the team is already out to dinner.
Yeah, well, they're winning the ping pong ball contest, and that's really important to Knicks fans who are watching a lot of Zion Williamson and a lot of Duke basketball. Sometimes some Knicks fans watch more Duke basketball than they watch Knicks basketball. But let's get right to Enes Kanter, Steve. And what did he have to say today at practice, and how did that jive with what he said after the game in Utah the other night?
Well, I asked him specifically, you know, you had 2 days, you know, we know you were upset after the game, you know, you guys, you know, got blown out, you're not, you know, feeling well, your back, he had complained about back pain, they're booing him, you know, every time he moves in Utah. I said, you know, 2 days, you know, removed from it, are you feeling the same? And his answer to that and every question we asked was, ask me after the game, I'll have a better answer. So it's sort of foreshadowing for what's to come tomorrow, because usually if he says he's got something to say, he'll say it. I suspect he's waiting to see what happens tomorrow. He's not going to start again for the third straight game. And I think he's, you know, kind of at the end here where he's, I asked him specifically, have you demanded a trade, you know, demanded a trade? He's done that before in his career in Utah. And he said, you know, he loves New York, you know, loves the fans, you know, likes the city, likes his teammates. But he said, what he specifically said was, all I can do right now, you know, that it's a test, and it's definitely one of the hardest tests of my career. I got to stay positive. But staying positive seems to be beyond his grasp right now.
Well, when you're losing time to Luke Kornet, who's not the most talented center in the league, but certainly a better outside shooter and, you know, a project guy for the Knicks in a tanking season, it sort of is what it is, isn't it, Steve? And Enes Kanter, you know, as you said to me on the phone earlier, he can't shoot outside of 3 feet, and he's terribly susceptible to being beaten in the pick and roll. But the guy is a good defensive rebounder, and he's a good offensive rebounder, and he could be of value to some sort of playoff team out there. Don't you agree?
Well, look, at one time in the NBA, a guy like Kanter would have had great value. You know, he could be a 20 and 10 guy if you give him minutes. He's had a lot of 20 and 20 games. He's a good, you know, very skilled player around the rim. He's a battler in there. He plays very hard on both ends. He's not a good defensive player. He actually has added a 3-point shot this year with mixed results, is, I guess, the kindest way to say it. And he's not a shooter like Luke Kornet. Look, this is all understandable. They are in a tanking season. They don't like to say that word, but this is all player development. It's all seeing who sticks around for the next phase of this. He's not a guy who's sticking around. He's got an $18 million contract this year that expires. They plan on clearing that cap space and chasing stars. They have no intention, I think, of bringing him back, probably at any price. And if you look at who he's losing minutes to earlier this year, it was Mitchell Robinson, who's a very raw, you know, never played a game of college ball. And he started a little bit over him, and Enes was unhappy at that. And now it's Luke Kornet, who was in the G League, you know, until just recently. And you know, look, it's got to be frustrating. He's a veteran, you know, he's an accomplished player. And he looks out there the other day, and Rudy Gobert is just destroying Kornet. And, you know, I'm not sure that Ennis would have made that much of a difference, but, you know, I'm sure he feels he could have done something. You know, he's a much more physical player than Cornette. You know, if Cornette isn't draining three pointers to help clear things out for your other players, you know, he's just not a high value player for you. So I understand Ennis's point, but he also knows what he got himself into here. This is kind of been clear since the summer that, you know, when this group took over, when Scott Perry joined on, David Fizdale came aboard, this all has been, you know, basically we're going to sit, you know, Kristaps Porzingis, let him heal, and develop the kids who are our future. And that's the three rookies from this year, Kevin Knox, Mitchell Robinson, and Alonzo Trier, and the guys they have, you know, control over from last year, Frank Ntilikina and Damian Dotson. And that's it. Everybody else is expendable on this team. I think probably they would like to rid themselves even of the contracts of the guys who do extend out, Tim Hardaway Jr. and Courtney Lee, and just kind of hand this over to the next group.
Yeah, you make a good point. And Tim Hardaway Jr. was a name I heard talking to a general manager I know in the league as a guy the Knicks are trying to move. He's making $17.3 million like next year, and he's making $18.1 million the year after that. Cantor is making $18.6 million, and it's an expiring deal, but the Knicks are going to have to throw in some sort of a sweetener, and Damian Dotson has turned a few heads around the league this season, as has Noah Vonleh. Steve, in your mind, would Damian Dotson or Noah Vonleh being added to a trade make Enes Kanter all that more tradable? Because that would get the number up to somewhere in the $20 million range. Noah makes 1.6. Dotson is at 1.4.
Well, it's a real tricky thing because the Knicks, they've had a couple of determinations that they've been very open about. They don't want to bring contracts and extend beyond this season. They can clear about $32 million right now in cap space, or maybe slightly under that. But they think they can kind of work their way around that. They would desperately love to move Courtney Lee's contract, Kanter if they could. Kanter will expire anyway, but Courtney Lee or Tim Hardaway, because those are the ones that really make the difference if you want to start bidding at the Kevin Durant level. I just don't think that, you know, and the other part of this is they've said that they don't want to attach future picks. You know, they want to stop trading draft picks, and they want to keep these young kids that they have under cheap control. That's the easy way around it, is to add the picks or to add a Dotson. I just don't know if they really want to do that right now. It would really have to be an attractive thing coming back to them. And I'm not sure Kanter nets you that. I've talked to a couple of people around the league, and I'm sure you've heard the same thing, that, you know, it's just he's an old school center, but doesn't defend well. Does he have great value to a team that needs to go up against a big guy? You know, you need to go up against a Steven Adams in the playoffs. Sure, but, you know, other teams, you know, Devin Booker put it out there very publicly that our entire strategy is, when we play the Knicks, is get him in pick and rolls. And it's a very effective method of attacking the Knicks. You know, look, there are a lot of ways to attack the Knicks, but that's one that teams have kind of picked out as an easy way in. You know, it's just not something he's good at. He doesn't have great footwork. He's not that quick. He's not as big as some centers. I think he's legitimately about a 6'10 guy. Not a great leaper, not super quick. He is what he is. He's a grinder who does some good things. But, you know, does that bring you back a $20 million player that is worth giving up some future pick asset for?
And would you consider Damian Dotson a future asset, or would you consider a guy who's just holding space? Same with Noah Vonleh.
Well, they're two different situations because Vonleh's contract is up after this year too. Dotson, they still have control over. I think they like Dotson. I think they see him as a guy who's, you know, sort of versatile. He could play a couple of positions. He defends, shoots threes at a very low price. Vonleh has been a great find for them. I think they've been very happy with what he's brought. Plays the game very hard, very versatile. David Fizdale is called the most complete player on the team. I think he's probably been the most surprising asset to them this year. And he's cheap. But they don't have control of him after this season. He's a free agent. I think they would like to keep him at a low cost, keep him in the picture. But remember, he's also playing power forward, where Porzingis is coming back at some point. You know, I think that, you know, in the right deal, of course, they would give him up. But, again, I don't know what value these guys have when, you know, teams can wait another 2 months and pick him up, you know, on the free agent market.
Sure, and he could be a February free agent guy if they can't find a trade and a buyout gets done. The Knicks right now tanking for quite well, tied with the Phoenix Suns for the second worst record in the league. The Cleveland Cavaliers are 8-29. Both those other teams are 9-28. But let's look at the teams that are overperforming and the teams that maybe could use them and fit them in. A lot of these teams are over the cap, but one that is not is a team that's sitting in ninth place right now in the Western Conference. The Sacramento Kings are an interesting team with what's gone on with sort of the front office versus coach doings with Dave Yeager and Brandon Williams. They do have a lot of expiring contracts and a lot of cap space on that room on that team on Sacramento. You could put together a deal that you start with Zach Randolph and then you kind of build in around that, maybe a Ben McLemore who's also on an expiring deal. And Sacramento can broker just about anything, but Sacramento needs to have some sort of future draft considerations thrown in order for them to get a deal done, because they can broker anything between now and the trade deadline on February 7th. You think first of all, the Sacramento Kings are the real thing, and then number two, Steve Popper, could Enes Kanter come in there, be a backup to Willie Cauley-Stein, and make that a legitimate playoff team?
Well, I think two things. I think, one, I do think they are a team on the rise, obviously. The way De'Aaron Fox has played this year, I'm not sure that anybody's made as big a jump from last year's class to kind of hit that sudden stardom that he's kind of hit that level. I think that Enes could help them. He's a very different player than Willie Cauley-Stein. But again, you know, if they're a team that's looking to get assets, I think the Knicks are in the same boat. They really want to look to this future, and they want to get assets, you know, get young assets, not give them. I just don't see them making a deal like that. You know, again, people have brought up the Jabari Parker thing in Chicago, where at least that's two people who are unhappy in their spots. So maybe you just, you know, exchange unhappy guy for unhappy guy and figure hopefully they're happier running out their contract in the new spot. But I just don't see that as a fit either. You know, in that case, you've got Robin Lopez there. There's no real need for Kanter. They're not a playoff team, obviously. It's tough. Again, as you said, he can help a team. You know, there's no doubt he can give good minutes in a playoff game. He's a very efficient scorer around the rim. He can get your rebounds. I just don't know that, you know, how you make the fit work for the Knicks to make it happen. I think they're going to try, that's for sure. I talked to somebody from the Knicks front office, and they said this will work itself out. And I think cryptically, you know, is they're trying to find a way to make it work itself out.
And let's not forget that Enes Kanter and Jabari Parker both share the same agent, Mark Bartelstein of Priority Sports. And Mark represents about, you know, a ton of players around the NBA. He can usually broker just about what he needs to get his players in places where they want to go. He did it last summer with Jabari Parker when he got the Bucks to release Jabari, and then the Bulls were able to sign him with room. And that's when Jabari got the two-year deal, $20 million the first year, $20 million the second year. But that second year is a team option, and he's gathering dust on the bench in Chicago. But I agree with you. Enes Kanter doesn't make any sense for a Bulls team that's, you know, 2 years away from being
Right. The only way I say that works is if these guys are such a problem, if they are a problem in locker rooms and with the coach, that they want to move them on, you know, to become somebody else's headache. And that's what Enes, I think they fear is becoming here, that, you know, there's some guys who, you know, Courtney Lee, Lance Thomas are in the same boat, veteran players who could help, a better team. And they're sitting the bench on this team, you know, for the kids. You know, it's a tough place to be in their career right now. But Enes is the one who's very vocally unhappy with it.
Mm-hmm. And let's look around at a couple other teams in the Western Conference. Because if you go into the Western Conference playoffs, you're going to have to deal with Nikola Jokic, who's a beast. Or you're going to have to deal with Steven Adams of the Oklahoma City Thunder, who's a beast. Clint Capella is more of a skill player and a skill defensive player, but he puts up great numbers for the Rockets. But what about San Antonio? Because San Antonio right now, Steve, is sitting in eighth place in the Western Conference, three games over 500 in what was supposed to be a lost season. But they're right in it. You know, there's 15 teams that are sort of right in it. If you go all the way down to the Pelicans, 14 teams. Pelicans are sitting in 14th place at 16-21. But that's not all that far out. That's only four games back of a playoff spot. So if Dell Demps can bring in another player to make Anthony Davis happy, that team can turn it around. Minnesota's in it. Dallas is in it. Utah's in it. But again, San Antonio, an interesting team because right now DeMar DeRozan and LaMarcus Aldridge are taking up most of their cap. Patty Mills is making a ton of money, $11 million. Rudy Gay is making $10 million. But Pau Gasol, interestingly enough, is at $16.8 million. The problem is Pau Gasol has a $16 million guarantee for next season. Any way that the Knicks would take on a $16 million guarantee for Pau Gasol for next year and eat up some of the cap space that they're hanging on to,
I think there's no chance of that. I think if they're going to get into – look, I asked them when Jimmy Butler was on the market, I asked some people in the front office if they would jump into that because, look, that's what you're hunting for next summer is that kind of player. You know, so could you get a head start and get them onto your team now? And they were insistent that they were not going to aggressively move at anything like that, that they'd listen, but – they weren't giving up any of the young kids. They weren't giving up future draft picks, you know. And these were situations where these teams are fielding those kind of offers. You know, the Rockets, the word was poor first rounders. They were looking to send it in the Butler deal. I don't see any way that kind of thing works. That's not the kind of contract they want to pull in. But I think, I mean, at some point they may have to start thinking that way. Because, you know, some of these free agents are kind of tying themselves. You know, if you believe what anyone says, Kyrie Irving says he wants to stay in Boston. Jimmy Butler says he wants to stay in Philly. So some of these stars are coming off the market. You know, are you going to put, you know, all your eggs into somehow you're going to pry Kevin Durant away from the best team of the last, century, the last decade for less money? You know, it's a tough gamble. So at some point they may say we've got to start considering the possibility that we've got to be buyers to bring one of these guys into our organization. I don't think they're there yet. And I don't think for a player like Powell, you know, that's what they would do. Maybe if Phil Jackson was still here, but not with this group.
Yeah, Powell with that extra year, I don't think the Knicks take on that kind of money because it takes away that cap space that they're hanging on to so dearly. So let's turn to the LA team, Steve, and we'll start with the Clippers. Very surprising, 21-15, fourth place in the Western Conference. And the Clippers are a team that actually I think Enes Kanter could help. Right now they're playing Marcin Gortat and Boban Marjanovic as their two rotation guys in the middle. Gortat's best years are certainly behind him. If you take a guy like Gortat, who's at $13.5 million, and you put him together with Teodosic, who's at $6.3 million, bang, you're right up there at $19.8 million, and that works in a trade for Enes Kanter. You like that trade for the Clippers?
I do, and I kind of think that's sort of the one that would kind of work. And look at clearing space for next summer. Obviously, the Clippers have prioritized that too, and in a way done it much better than the Knicks. I believe they're going to be able to get two max guys and are using Los Angeles, the cap space and the situation and Doc Rivers and everything to try and lure, you know, I mean, the word has been already, you know, Kawhi Leonard, Kevin Durant, that, you know, they're trying to pair two stars there together. And I think that's a much more attractive situation than the Knicks right now. So I think it works out for them. I'm not sure if Gortat's contract, if it's expiring, if he's got anything for next year. He's up. So then I think that is a possible spot. And again, like I said, I think the Knicks are open to anything right now. He is not the future. They don't care about the present right now, obviously. Mitchell Robinson's been hurt, but he should be back probably by the end of the trip they're on. Probably will just miss the Lakers and maybe come either at, you know, later stages of this trip or when they get back home. So they'll have him. They'll have Cornette. Noah Vonleh can give you some minutes there. I think, you know, they'd make the move at any moment to move Ennis.
Yeah, and I think the Clippers, it shouldn't go unmentioned that Montrezl Harrell is having just a really great season off the bench,
yep.
putting himself in six-man consideration along with his teammate Lou Williams. But you take Gortat out of the picture, and then you have a center position that's manned by Kanter and Marjanovic and Alexis Ojinka, along with Montrez. It's, you know, that's a center by committee of four guys, but Kanter is a guy that can bang with a Steven Adams, and he can bang with a Nikola
yep.
Jokic. I don't know that he can guard
yep.
Jokic on the perimeter, but Jokic is a confounding guy for just about every team out there. let's turn
that.
To the other.
I'll answer that. He cannot guard him on the perimeter.
No.
Yeah, and look, it's but you know, as you said, these are guys. You know, I think there is some value in a playoff series. You know, with things slow down. You know, he's not any elite defender. He's not a good defender, but he is a banger. You've got to, you know, he's going to put a body on guys. He's very strong. So, you know, I do think he has value, especially in a little slow down playoff series for a team.
And then let's look at the team with the other, with the larger locker room at the Staples Center. I watched them last night, beat the Sacramento Kings with their B team. But the Los Angeles Lakers are having an okay season, given that they're breaking in LeBron James and they're seeing who fits in around them. They're 21-16 and then sixth place in the West. They got the two guys playing center right now are JaVale McGee, who just came back from an injury, and Tyson Chandler, who got waived by the Phoenix Suns. When you start looking at the numbers, Steve, you got to start building a trade around a guy named Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, who had a nice game last night. He's a good outside shooter. He's a clutch sports guy, and he's got to okay any trade, because if he gets traded, he gives up his bird rights. And right now he's at
right.
$12 million. He's on an expiring $12 million deal. If you put a guy like, maybe a Lance Stevenson in there, you get it up to $16.5 million. Michael Beasley's on that roster. He was with the Knicks last season. If he goes in, it gets up to 20, and then the Knicks will probably have to throw a piece back. What about the Los Angeles Lakers and Enes Kanter? You see that as a fit?
That's a tough one. I'm not sure about that. Well, I'll start it with this. I'm not sure of the relationship he has with LeBron James. They went nose to nose last year. Kanter has kind of trolled him a little bit on Twitter, so that's not a good start for increasing your value to the Lakers. But I do think Chandler has been a good pickup for them and kind of fits more with what they need right now. You know, he is a defense rebound first guy, probably not as good offensively as Kanter, but much better at the other end. And I think with a LeBron James run team, I think that holds a little more value. I think that's a team that I'd see a hard time LeBron pushing or okaying that trade. It just doesn't seem to be the personality fit and the need for the Lakers that I think Chandler fills a need better for them.
Yeah, I kind of agree, but let's also remember that Lance Stevenson used to blow in LeBron's ear back in the day. And then...
that is true. So LeBron's a pretty good GM in that he can at least put aside personal feelings if he feels like I can help him.
Sure, and people underestimate how much LeBron James wants to make it 9 straight trips to the NBA Finals. For everybody out there who says, oh, they can't do it this year and they're all about next year, I think there's some truth to that, but I don't think there's a ton of truth to that. LeBron James wants to compete for a championship this year, and
I agree with that completely. I think that he's, you know, he values where he is at in his career age wise. You know, he talks about playing 4 or 5 more years, but he's also knows his age, and you don't give away years at that point.
No, certainly not, and that's why I'm continually say what the Lakers look like today and what the Lakers look like on March 1st when playoff rosters get set, those are two completely different things. Right now, the Knicks and the Nuggets is off the board for tomorrow night because of the uncertainty surrounding. It is. It's off the board. It's locked up because of the uncertainty surrounding
right.
Enes Kanter. But there are quite a few interesting games on the slate tonight in the NBA, and one team we just the marquee game really is the game we just talked or one of the, involves one of the teams we just talked about. The Boston Celtics are down in San Antonio playing the Spurs. Boston Celtics have had their problems this year. The Spurs are overachievers, and the Celtics are only 1-point favorites on the road. What's wrong with Boston, Steve Popper?
You know, it's a very tough one to say, but I think it's as simple as this. It takes time when you put guys in and match guys up. You know, Kyrie was lost for late last season and for the postseason, and a lot of guys flourished in that absence. Gordon Hayward obviously hurt 5 minutes into the season last year, misses the whole year. Those are two super talented guys that you're adding back into the mix, and I just think it takes time. It takes time to add them in, to get them to work, for everyone to understand and be happy with their roles. You know, it's a five-man game, and Brad Stevens is a great coach, I think, but it's not easy to get guys to, you know, to change roles, to understand where they should get the ball, how they should work into the offense, being defensively, same thing. I just think it's a time thing, and when I watched it, there's just so much talent there. The depth of that team is tremendous. The only teams I've seen this year that I thought depth-wise matched up with Golden State, you know, when we get to the playoffs, are Boston and I think Toronto. May not have all the talent that Golden State has, but they have great depth. I just think they're going to be fine. It's funny. I've seen Boston and I've seen Utah this year, and I look at both those teams and I'm like, I don't care what the record is. I feel like they're going to be good, but you know, when it counts, by the time the end of the season comes around, they're going to get it together. They're good coaches, good players, good talent, some experience. I just think they're going to get it together.
Yeah, I agree with you, especially with Utah. Remember, that's a team that beat Golden State twice last year by 30, and they beat them another time by 19. In one of the early matchups of the season, they had them down by a bunch at halftime, and then they blew it in the second half. And they're sort of a quandary at 18 and 19 when they were predicted to be a top three, top four team in the West.
Say this: the Knicks are as bad talent wise as any team in the league, so it's hard to judge teams against them. But we saw them the other day without Rubio or Crowder, and what I liked was the way they move the ball is just unbelievable. They share the ball. Defensively, Donovan Mitchell, obviously, we love to see the highlights offensively. Just watching him close up, he just puts such an effort out defensively, really, denying Tim Hardaway the ball. Just did a great job. I just think those guys are a really well-coached team, and I think at full strength in the playoffs, they're going to be a problem for somebody.
And, Steve, when you look forward to next summer and start when, Knicks fans, that's what they want to talk about, next summer. And who's going to come in? Who are they going to pick in the lottery? Number one, what's Knox going to look like? What's Robinson going to look like with the season under their belt? Will Porzingis come back this season, or will they just keep him out until next season? And then the multi-million-dollar question: they're going to have enough room for two max guys. Who do you think those max guys are going to be? Who's number one, two, three, four, five on their wish list?
Well, the Knicks won't have room for two max. Right now, they're anticipating they'll be able to get one of the like 7-year max guys. I think they've got about 30. Looks like 30 will be about cleared right now. They want to get to 32 for that, that 7-year contract. And then I don't see a way, unless they can find a taker for Tim Hardaway Jr. For an expiring contract, which I think is possible. I don't see how they're going to get up to two. It's going to be tough. They'd have to move Hardaway and move Courtney Lee for expiring deals. It's tough to do, and renouncing just about everybody. I really think they're putting their eggs in the Durant basket, hoping that there's some sort of New York love there, that he's interested enough and likes the Garden and likes the group there. Porzingis is a weird key to all this. I think guys like the idea of playing with him, but we really don't know what he's going to be. It's a tough one to predict. I mean, he's a very talented guy who was sort of reaching, a star level, but I don't think anybody would say, he's the best young player in the game. Giannis is better than him. Jokic has probably run by him. He has a lot of allure because of his size and strength, the kind of the strangeness of his game. But you know, does this knee heal completely? Is he the same player? Is he better, or is he slowed down at all? Part of what makes him unusual is he's a 7'3" guy who can move a little bit and, you know, who can play on the perimeter. Teams kind of figured a little bit about him last year, you know, in the past 2 years, really. You know, when Brad Stevens started playing Marcus Smart against him, you know, realizing that you could put a smaller, strong guy in, you know, in front of him and kind of get into his legs, and he wasn't able to kind of counter that yet. And those are adjustments he was, you know, hoping to make before the injury. But then, you know, if he comes back and he's not as agile as he was, if he becomes a 7'3" spot-up 3-point shooter, I'm not sure that's a great value. So it's tough. We got to see what he is, if he's going to become the star that we all think he can be. I think that will have a lot to do with what they can lure into the team, you know, into the organization. And I think part of that will be determined on whether he comes back this year too. So people can see, you know, he's back or he isn't, you know, what he's going to become.
Yeah. And what's your take on that? Is that there's obviously, to me, there's absolutely zero to gain in the risk reward factor by bringing Kristaps Porzingis back this season. He's coming off an ACL. It takes a year to heal. You don't gain anything by having him play in March or April when the games don't matter. Heck, the games for the Knicks don't matter all that much right now.
Right.
Would they take a risk and put him back out there just to see if he can, you know, get a few games under his belt and get his groove back, or they got to let him play for Latvia over the summer in Eurobasket and have it, and do his rehab over there?
With the Knicks, nothing is ever without added drama. It's a weird situation because he is a free agent at season's end. He's a restricted free agent, so, you know, not essentially a free agent, but there have been obviously rifts between his people, him and his people, and the organization in the past. So, you know, you want to do what's going to make him happy. He seems to be kind of pushing that he wants to get back. You know, when he's 100%, I'll be back. I want to get out there and play. He hasn't spoken since the start of training camp. But, you know, he posts his workouts on Instagram like every player does, and, you know, kind of seems to be pushing to get back sooner than later. I had a trainer tell me the night he was injured that it takes a good year at least, and that's, you know, not even considering his you know, unusual frame. We met with Steve Mills recently. He said in mid-February, they're going to reevaluate him and, you know, see where he's at, if they can bringing him into contact practices. He's been doing some running. He's been doing some work shooting, but, you know, hasn't done any contact. So I think at that point, they're going to see where he's at, if they can bring him back. To me, it doesn't really have value. I'd rather not risk it and just continue to pile up the losses and you know, try and get one of those top three spots in the lottery where you can shoot for that top spot with the highest odds. You know, a reasonably healthy Porzingis obviously, you know, helps your chances of winning a game, which hurts their chances of advancing in a lower spot in the lottery. So, to me, it doesn't make sense to bring him back. But, you know, unless you really are unsure of what you've got and you've got to see him on the court, or he wants to see himself on the court.
You know, that the number of games you win impacts the number of ping pong balls you get. The NBA has changed the odds so that the bottom three teams all have an equal chance to win the lottery. And right now, that's the Cavs and the Suns and the Knicks. And, you know, there's not that many teams that can fall that far.
I feel like the Knicks are about to get a stranglehold on one of those spots because if they four more games on this West Coast trip, and they're all good teams. They're all, you know, they're going to continue to plummet.
Yeah, well, at a certain point, Steve, you're going to be covering a Hawks-Knicks game or a Bulls-Knicks game or a Cavs-Knicks game, hundreds and hundreds of people will be interested in what happens in that game. Let's go back to the Christmas Day game. I'm sorry. Let's go back to the Christmas Day game against the Milwaukee Bucks. That was a noon start at the Garden, and the place was not exactly loud. You know, Giannis brought in some players, and Noah Vonleh had a spectacular rejection of Giannis on a dunk, but watching that game with the family, it didn't look like there was anybody there. The people weren't even coming back to their seats after halftime. What's the atmosphere like in the Garden this year? You've been covering basketball like myself at MSG for over 20 years. What's it like inside the building this year?
Very sad to see. It's a lot of tourists. But, you know, they sell out or near sell out almost every night. But, you know, it's not the Garden that it was. It's not, you know, the same, you know, loyal fans that are out there, you know, that want to see the, you know, Patrick Ewing years and the, you know, the hardworking teams that were, you know, defensive minded, whatever, you know, championship contenders. I feel like this is corporate tickets being given away to, you know, out of town guests. You know, people come in there and politely sit there and listen and watch and get amazed by the t-shirt cannons, which seems to be the most interesting thing on most nights at the Garden. And then you have nights where Giannis or LeBron, players like that, will draw interest. But look, there is nothing much to see on this Knicks team. There's no, you know, even Porzingis always had, you know, a great allure as a star. Kevin Knox is, you know, a fine young rookie, but I don't think he's drawing fans or, you know, no one's oohing and aahing over you know, the way he plays on the court. He's just not that kind of player. So I just think it's not Knicks fans there anymore. So it's a tough venue for them to, you know, they don't have that home court advantage they used to have. The best thing they've got is the nightlife in New York, wearing teams out before a noon game.
We've seen that in the locker room before, and that was always a tip. Berman and I like to bet a dollar on each game, and you know, we'd look over the we'd scout out the opposing locker room to see if these guys had been out, and you know, God forbid they had been out the night before, and then the team scheduled a shoot around, because then you got guys drinking coffee just to come alive. But yep. Steve, let's look at the Eastern Conference and kind of take it from the top down. Right now, you've got only five teams over 500: the Bucks, the Raptors, the Pacers, the Sixers, and the Celtics. And then right now, the Hornets, Heat, Pistons, and Magic, along with the Brooklyn Nets, who have played pretty well of late, they're all in kind of the playoff hunt. Let's start at the bottom with the team across the East River, the Brooklyn Nets. They got what it takes to make it to the Eastern Conference playoffs this year?
I think they do. I really think Kenny Atkinson has done a tremendous job. You know, the Knicks preach player development nonstop. Atkinson was a great guy for that with the Knicks, and he's done a great job, I think, with the Nets. If you look at that roster, it's not all that impressive. But he's taken guys, gotten the best out of them. And I think, you know, if they can get Caris LeVert back and healthy, you know, he was emerging as sort of a, you know, a young star there. I think that they can be. And I think even without him, you just look at the way they play every night. They play hard every night. They don't give games away. They're in everything. D'Angelo Russell has played well. Jared Dudley's played well. And I really like Jared Allen. I think he's you know, just a good, young, hardworking, defensive-minded center. I think that they are a team to watch. And I think if any of those teams above them sort of give them air, I think they will make a run at it. I don't think they're a contender, but I think they are a playoff team this year.
Yeah, and I'd say their number one trade asset right now is D'Angelo Russell, who's been the starter most of the season. Even though he's starting, Spencer Dinwiddie plays the same position, and Spencer Dinwiddie's often the guy who finishes games. Spencer's a more aggressive player, gets to the line a lot more than D'Angelo Russell does.
And they invested in Spencer too.
Right, they gave him three more years. So they're a team that you know, they need help somewhere, and they're also holding cap space for next summer. But at the end of the day, if Sean Marks could find a value player or, you know, a building block player out there and swap D'Angelo Russell for him, you know, and upgrade it at one of the power positions outside of center, I think at power forward and on the wing, you know, LeVert is out, but at a certain point, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson can only give you so much. And D'Angelo Russell does have some trade value. But, again, now let's move up to the top five. And we got the Bucks, Raptors, Pacers, Sixers, and Celtics. Steve, out of those five teams, Which one is the favorite in your mind to come out of the Eastern Conference with the way the rosters now stand?
Boy, you know, it's tough. I came into the year thinking the Celtics were the class of the conference. I really liked what they did last year, and I thought, you know, with the addition this year of the, you know, getting back Hayward and Irving at full strength, I saw them, I thought, as the contender, you know, the team that could possibly give the Warriors a run for their money. But I think that there's a couple of interesting teams there. I really think we just saw the Sixers the other day, and they're just a different team with Jimmy Butler. I think that, you know, they're sort of the same as we said about the Celtics earlier. They're feeling their way of how everyone's in roles. And if they can make that work, I just think he's a great asset for them. He's, you know, he's a great two-way player. He's a great playoff player. He's a clutch player offensively, defensively. He's a stopper. You know, he can shoot from the perimeter. I just think he does everything well. And, you know, we all talk about the process they went through there and the tanking and, you know, these picks and some they hit on, some they missed. I think almost overlooked is what they did with some players, you know, either undrafted or second round guys. You know, T.J. O'Connell is a great little player. And Covington was a great find for them, you know, helped get Jimmy Butler. I think they've done a pretty good job around the margins, developing some guys, you know, Brett Brown patiently wading through all this and making the most of some of those guys that you could then turn into a better deal, a bigger deal for a better player. So I think that they're going to be a playoff problem for somebody. And I think at the top, Toronto is just – it's hard to rule them out. They're just so deep. And you take a team, you know, you took DeMar DeRozan, who was an MVP candidate last year, and as good as he was, he's not Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi Leonard is, you know, probably a top three player in the league who's playing that way this year and can match up against anyone, including LeBron, including, you know, anybody the Warriors have. He is an elite, you know, LeBron-level, you know, versatile defender, offensive player. I just think that you know, that's another team that I just think can give somebody a prop in the playoffs. I think those three teams all are capable of going to the finals.
And what about the team nobody likes to talk about, but the team who's got the longest winning streak in the East right now? The Indiana Pacers have won 5 in a row. They're at 25-12, and nobody talks about them except unless they come on my show, because I make everyone talk about the Pacers because I like them.
They're great. And for two years we've been doing that, like wondering, how are they doing this?
And they're doing it with chemistry. The guys they got back for Paul George are contributing players, and they're deep. Collison's a good player. Sabonis comes off the bench and gives them a lot behind Miles Turner, and nobody talks about them because they're a small market team. But they're got basically the same team that they went to Game 7 with last season. The only guy that
I think even better than last season, because I think Turner has made a big jump. I think he's become a better player. So I think that gives him another star quality, just super athletic guy who I think plays both ends of the floor, can now, you know, shoot the three, can, you know, he's a problem for teams, to match up with. And I think Sabonis is, you know, we're old enough to remember his dad, and he's not his dad, but he's a very skilled player, right? And I think people overlook that because Oladipo played so well last year. But he's a huge part of that trade, and I think a huge part of their future.
And let's turn our attention now to the Western Conference, Steve, and we're going to look at some odds there, and this gives me a chance to plug the guys paying the bill. Gambling is not illegal in the United States anymore, and people are still getting used to that. It's been that way since May 14th when the Supreme Court overturned the PASPA, the Professional and Amateur Sports Protection Act. So you can bet it in the United States, and in Jersey you can do it, you know, from your phone. But in New York, where I live, you got to go online, and you got to do it with an offshore. I make small bets, try to hit 5 for 5 parlays every night, and every now and then I hit them, and then a lot of times I hit 4, and then that's why I'm a bookie's best friend. But
and that leads me to remind everyone that this podcast lives on GetMoreSports.com, but. You need to know that if you go to mybookie.com and enter bonus code BBALL1000, that's all capital letters, BBALL1000, They'll match your first $1,000 bonus or your first $1,000 deposit. They'll give you an extra $1,000. You'll have $2,000 to play with. And you have some fun with your $2,000. But, you know, $1,000 of free money is good. So go to mybookie.com. And, again, promo code is BBALL1000. And so let's continue.
Steve, in the Western Conference right now, the Golden State Warriors are prohibitive favorites to win, and that's for obvious reasons. And right now, the second shortest odds are on the Houston Rockets at 6-1. The Lakers are at 11-1, and the Thunder are at 10-1. The Nuggets, surprisingly, in first place, are at 13-1 to come out of the West. What do you make of those odds? And who do you think has the best shot at being able to beat the Golden State Warriors in a best of seven playoff series?
Well, let me say, first of all, I remain a Golden State Warriors true believer. I have for a while now, and I think, you know, they're another team that, you know, we've seen it over the years. As teams get through these runs, it's tough to maintain it, you know, with injuries, with interest. It's hard to maintain it, you know, all year long. But I still think when it comes down to it, they're still, you know, the – I don't know what the odds are, but I'll tell you, I'd pick them over anybody.
The odds are prohibitive. They're at minus 450, which means you got to bet 450 to win 100. And that's, yep. You know, they are what they are. They're the two-time defending champs. But what about the Nuggets at 13-1? Because
I was just going to say that I think that team is, you talk about the Pacers being under the radar. I think what the Nuggets have done is really under the radar too. And I almost don't even know how there's been so little attention on what they've done. I think Mike Malone has done a tremendous job there of kind of piece by piece putting this team together, surviving some of the hard times. We were actually talking to David Bisdell about that today, that, you know, this is, you know, it's very hard to see it, you know, when you're at this stage where the Knicks are. But he's kind of endured and lasted through and survived the hard hits, the hard years, you know, early on. And now Jokic has become, you know, probably a top 10 player, top 5 player in the league right now. So versatile, you know, great ability to pass the ball, shoot the ball, just a smart, fundamentally sound player, and a star. But that team is so much more than that. There's just depth, and they share the ball, they defend, they play the game the right way, and they have shooters all over the place. I just think they're a team that, like Utah was in the past for Golden State, I think that Denver can be that now, a team that really can give somebody a hard time. They have a lot of depth, they have a lot of weapons, and I just think they're getting better as the year goes on.
And then let's turn it back to the Knicks, and because we're going to need to wrap soon. And Steve, you've covered a lot of guys in the Knicks locker room as well as I have. Some are easier to deal with than others. You know, certain guys, Carmelo Anthony comes to mind, made you wait around for an hour and 20 minutes before they talked. Other guys will be ready as soon as the locker opened. Patrick Ewing comes to mind. But Enes Kanter is certainly a very colorful figure. He's my son William's favorite basketball player. And I was teaching William a little bit the other night about the history of Turkish government and Turkish politics. And Enes Kanter can't go back to Turkey right now. Can you explain a little bit of what's going on there to our listeners?
Well, he's been a political dissident. He's been very vocal opponent to the president there, Erdogan, and it hasn't come without risk to him. He was, you know, detained before he came to the Knicks. He was detained overseas in Romania. The NBA had to intercede and help get him home. He can't go back home. His father was arrested at one point. He can't have contact with his family. He has a brother here in the United States, although I think he may be playing, I can't remember if he's playing G League or overseas right now. But he basically has very vocally gone out against the president and done it at the risk of death threats. He's done it at the risk of, they were going to try him in absentia. And look, in 2 weeks we're heading to London, and I haven't been able to get a clear answer from the Knicks if he'll be able to go. That may not be such a big deal right now when they're not playing him, starting him anymore. might not be worth the risk, but he's put himself in a position where by taking a very, I'd say, courageous stand, he's risks himself. If he leaves the United States, everything is a risk for him. He kind of has to be careful going anywhere that he can have his passport revoked or taken away, and Turkey is trying to have him arrested.
And he is applying for United States citizenship. But he a fun guy to cover, Steve?
He's a great guy. He's a lot of fun. And he's obviously in a tough situation right now where it's hard to be the happy, funny guy. He's embraced New York. He's a guy who takes the subways and, loves to go out in Times Square and take selfies with fans. He's a great media guy. But it's hard, it's hard to be that happy guy. Look, Carmelo Anthony saw it. He was great with the media. He took a long time to get out of the locker room, get him to his locker after a game for interviews, but it was always worth it. He was always, very amicable with us, answered every question, answered the hard questions, was there after every loss, talked openly about the problems with Phil Jackson when they were going on. He was great with us. And he had the same thing sort of where he went through, a very different situation, but it was, Phil was criticizing him and suddenly he had to be talk about very tough subjects. And it's hard to, in New York, in that media microscope to be the happy go lucky guy when things aren't going that way. He's had it politically and he's got it now. With his situation, playing time and being a bench player when he's heading into free agency. He did say today that he knows, he thinks teams know him, and he feels like, whatever the Knicks do to him right now isn't going to affect his free agency or, trade value. I'm not so sure of that, but we'll see.
We'll see. He's Steve Popper on Twitter. He's at Steve Popper. That's P-O-P-E-R. He's a Knicks writer and NBA columnist for Newsday Sports. Works for a good guy, Hank Winicky, a veteran. Is there any New York newspaper that you haven't worked for, Steve?
I've avoided the Daily News, which looks like a good one right now because the tough times that they've gone through, I feel bad for. A lot of great writers there. We worked 14 years for Gannett for the Record in New Jersey before coming here, but, been briefly New York Post, longtime New York Times. Got around. It's a small circle for us, so we make friends in business and shift around and find what's good for us, what works right. I've usually found myself around the NBA, which is for you too, I'm sure, a sweet spot.
Oh, sure. It's the relationships you make in the NBA, they last a lifetime, and we both have a lot of mutual friends. Nets are a fun team to cover. A lot of interesting personalities on that beat, and. And we're just going to kind of leave it at that, and we're not going to talk about your history at Associated Press.
Let's leave it. Security may be still looking for me.
Anyway, he's Steve Popper again. He's at Steve Popper on Twitter, and you can follow whatever he writes by following at Newsday Sports, which is one word. I'm Chris Sheridan. I'm at Sheridan Hoops on Twitter. It's the same Twitter handle I've been rolling with for quite a long time now. I want to thank everyone for joining us wherever you're listening in from around the world. Make yourself a winning streak for the year 2019 and make that your New Year's resolution. And no matter how much you bet, you're always on the you keep the house money in the right side in the right pocket, and you keep your own money in the left pocket. Keep that right pocket full. And with that, Steve, again, I want to thank you again for joining us, taking some time out of your day in Denver. Say hello to the fellows and try to break that Enos Kanter trade before I do or before somebody else.
We'll try that. Happy New Year to all. Have a good night.
Okay, and with that, we're going to go over and out.
This podcast lives on GetMoreSports.com, but you need to know that if you go to mybookie.com and enter bonus code BBALL1000, that's all capital letters, BBALL1000, they'll match your first $1,000 bonus or your first $1,000 deposit. They'll give you an extra $1,000. You'll have $2,000 to play with. And you have some fun with your $2,000. But, $1,000 of free money is good. So go to mybookie.com and, again, promo code is BBALL1000.